change, we're going to read the same thing we've been reading. Canto 3, chapter 24. We'll cover three texts, 27, 28, 29. Chapter is entitled The Renunciation of Kardamuni. Kardamuni is going to be the speaker, and he's speaking to the personality of Godhead, Lord Kapila, who has appeared as his son. And the immediate preceding events, we're going back a little distance. Tens of thousands of years of austerity, performance of meditation, the practices that Kardamuni was engaged in. Devahuti was with him the whole time, assisting, and at a certain point, Kardamuni recognized her desire for children is very strong, and so he spoke to her and said, I understand your desire, you've satisfied me very much, and so he made arrangements. And, you know, long description, but by his mystic power, he'd even say a mantra, he just manifested a flying city. They traveled around the universe and returned after some time back to his hermitage. Nine daughters were born. Lord Brahma came, the father of Kardamuni. Kardamuni is one of the mental sons of Lord Brahma. He was appreciating the service of Kardamuni in a variety of ways, because one of his functions is these sons that were mental sons, there to give knowledge but also to perform the function of prajapatis. So these nine daughters were then entrusted to sages. By Brahma's arrangement, the sages came, they accepted these nine daughters as their wives, and they left. Brahma left. Lord Kapila, Brahma said, the child that's within the womb of Devahuti, this is Lord Vishnu. Everyone heard it. Everyone knew it. There wasn't a question about it. Kapila Dev was born. Kapila Dev grew up. And now, in a secluded place, of course, they're in this hermitage, which is a secluded place anyways, Kardamuni is going to speak to Kapila Dev, understanding him to be Lord Vishnu. And in these three verses, he's giving reasons why Kapila Dev appeared.
If you recall from Queen Kunti's prayers, there's a whole series of verses where she's addressing the same question. Why does the Supreme Lord appear? He who was unborn is born. It is mysterious, and aside from the mystery, why? And then different people have different explanations. She goes through that whole discussion. And the concluding portion, Vishwanath says, it's to liberate, give mercy to those in the mode of goodness and bring them to the stage of perfection. So, this is Kardamuni's speaking to Lord Vishnu in the form of his son, expressing why he appeared. basically it's there's three verses, there's three parts. To relieve the distress of the demigods. That's mentioned by Devahuti also, excuse me, by Kunti. More than the perfect yogi, because Kardama Muni, he's a yogi. He's a devotee, he's a yogi. He's performing the activities of, he's a meditator. The process of Satyuga is dhyan, meditation. So he's all those things, but one of among them, one of the things is he's a yogi. And even yogis, after many, many lifetimes, may not see the Supreme Lord. Essentially, that was like what, it's very similar to what Narada said to Dhruva. Many, many lifetimes. It's a very difficult process. Put it for us. Not so easy. Then finally, his expression is, for your household or devotee, unqualified as we are, Kardama and Devahuti, you've appeared. Because you're Bhakta Vatsala. The themes of the Bhagavatam appear in very interesting, different, diverse ways. And the theme doesn't change. Life repeats, history repeats itself. And the message here is pure devotion attracts the Supreme Lord. Of course, he's characterizing himself as a fallen person, an unqualified person, an ordinary person. That's his humility. But he's saying specifically, even for people that are ordinary like us, the Lord can appear. So that's his speech or his words to his son, Kapila Dev, will continue. But that's these first three verses, or these are translation. Kardama Muni said, oh, after a long time, the demigods of this universe have become pleased with the suffering souls who are in material entanglement because of their own misdeeds. So the demigods are concerned. The Supreme Lord is concerned. The demigods are representing him. They're concerned about these, the suffering condition of living entities in this world. This is such a yuga. Demigods must be really worried about Kali Yuga. The purport is short. The material world is a place for suffering, which is due to the misdeeds of the inhabitants, the conditioned souls themselves. The sufferings are not extraneously imposed upon them, semicolon. Rather, the conditioned souls create their own suffering by their own acts. Bhagavad Gita message, chapter 13, same. Then he gives an example of how difficulty comes of its own accord. And so, using the example of a forest fire. In the forest, fire takes place automatically. It is not that someone has to go there and set a fire. Because of friction among various trees, fire occurs automatically. When there's too much heat from the forest fire of this material world, the demigods, including Brahma himself, being harassed, approach the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality Godhead, and appeal to him to alleviate the condition. Then the Supreme Personality Godhead descends. In other words, when the demigods become distressed by the sufferings of the conditioned souls, they approach the Lord to remedy the suffering And the personality of Godhead descends. When the Lord descends, all the demigods become enlivened. So one of the causes of the Lord's descent is the demigod's appeal. Please help these conditioned souls. You can do it. Please descend. So now Prabhupada, last part, he paraphrases. Therefore, Kardamuni said, quote, after many, many years of human suffering, all the demigods are now satisfied because Kapila Dev, the incarnation of Godhead, has appeared. Of course, it's his son. So he's an instrument for the will of the Supreme Lord because Lord is reciprocating with the demigods out of their concern for the suffering of humanity. Then he speaks about the yogis, and the yogis can't achieve that. He comes for the for this group of people, suffering humanity, but it's not by the yogis, it's by to appear before them. Very, 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 very rare. Bahu janma vipakvena. In the mature stage of their yoga activity, vipakvena. After many, many births, mature yogis, by complete trance and yoga, endeavor a secluded place to see the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's a yogi. He already saw him in the forest long ago. But it's not by yoga strength, by his devotional strength. Purport. Some important things are mentioned here about yoga. The word Bahujanma Vipakvena means, quote, after many, many births of mature yoga practice. And another word, Samyak Yoga Samadhina, means, quote, by complete practice of the yoga system. Complete practice of yoga means Bhakti Yoga. Semicolon. Unless one comes to the point of Bhakti Yoga or surrender to the Personality of Godhead, one's yoga practice is not complete. This same point is corroborated in Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Jamanamante, after many, many births. The Jnani, who has matured in transcendental knowledge, surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kardamuni repeats the same statement. After many, many years and many, many births of complete practice of yoga, one may see the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in a secluded place. It is not that after one practices some sitting postures, immediately becomes perfect. One has to perform yoga for a long time, many, many births, to become mature. And a yogi has to practice in a secluded place. One cannot practice yoga in a city or a public park and declare that he has become God by some exchange of dollars. This is all bogus propaganda. Those are actually yogis. Practice in a secluded place. And after many, many births, they become successful, provided they surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the completion of yoga. That's a nice qualifier of this statement. Now he's a yogi, mystic, powerful, and he's seeing the Personality of Godhead. Moreover, he's become his son. So this form of mercy, that form of mercy, in the final text 29. Not considering the negligence of ordinary householders like us, that very same Supreme Personality Godhead appears in our homes to support his devotees. It's in the plural. Purport. Devotees are so affectionate towards the personality of Godhead, that, although he does not appear before those who practice yoga in a secluded place even after many, many births, he agrees to appear in a householder's home, where devotees engage in devotional service. Without material yoga practice, in other words, devotional service to the Lord is so easy that even a householder can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one of the members of his household, as his son, as Kardama Muni, experienced. He was a householder, although a yogi, but he had the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila Muni, as his son. Paragraph. Devotional service is such a powerful transcendental method that it surpasses all other methods of transcendental realization. The Lord says, therefore, that he lives neither in Vaikuntha nor in the heart of the yogi, but he lives where his pure devotees are always chanting and glorifying him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Bhakta Vatsala. He's never described as Gyani, Gyani Vatsala, or Yogi Vatsala. He's always described as Bhakta Vatsala because he is more inclined towards his devotees than towards other transcendentalists. The Bhagavad Gita is confirmed that only a devotee can understand him as he is. Again, Bhaktya Mama Vijanati. Quote, one can understand me only by devotional service, not otherwise. That understanding alone is real because although Gyanis, mental speculators, can realize only effulgence or the bodily luster of the Supreme Personality Godhead, and the yogis can realize only the partial representation of the Supreme Personality Godhead, a bhakta not only realizes him as he is, but also associates with the Personality Godhead face to face. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I mean, he's taken these three verses and it's bhakti and bhakti and bhakti. Any questions? Bhakti and bhakti and bhakti. Not something else. Bhakti only. Any questions? So, if someone's suffering, doesn't mean just suffer long enough and that's your credential for having the Personality of Godhead appear. It's out of mercy, and there's agents of mercy. In the first verse, it's the demigods, because they can't bear to see the suffering of the living entities who they're in charge of. And so it's their mercy and the Lord appears. Or the yogi, not ordinary, many, 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 many lifetimes in a secluded place where he surrenders to the Personality of Godhead, the Lord can also appear. These are causes of the Lord's descent. Now, whether the demigod or the yogi, even an ordinary person, lifestyle-wise, but engaged in devotion to the Personality of Godhead, he may appear, as he is characterizing his case. Not qualified, but he appears because he's very merciful. In one sense, devotees are very simple, and we don't have a problem that he was unborn, is born. Although it's a contradiction, it's the simple hearts of a devotee say, not a problem. Because, not a problem, because he has unlimited potencies. And he can do the inconceivable with those inconceivable potencies. In the beginning of Bhagavat Sandarbha, one of the six Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, that's taking the message that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has all opulences in full, that's Bhagavan, drawn from the Vishnu Purana, Parashara states, Bhagavan is one who has all opulences in full, and lists the six opulences. So, in Bhagavat Sandarbha, to counter impersonalists, Jiva Goswami says, there's no question of understanding God. This is now the Bhagavan feature. There's no question of understanding God without accepting that he has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. And then conversely, by accepting that, it's easy to understand him. So that which is a mystery is easy to understand because he has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. Now, what prompts, let's accept he's Bhagavan. What prompts him to exhibit those potencies and not exhibit those potencies? Well, it's his free will. He's not bound by a causal relationship. When this happens, then that result. Because he's bound by prompts. He's controlled by something. He's not controlled by something. Yet, he's a person. One of his primary opulences. And he reciprocates with exactly as those who are, approach him. One of the mysteries of the Personality of Godhead is the exalted position of the residents of Vrindavan, where they don't see him as the Personality of Godhead. They don't see him as Bhagavan. So way down here, there's the atheists. God can't do that. Or then the impersonalists. I can do that. I'm working on it. I got my God project going, and I'm going to become God soon. Or I'm already God. I just haven't realized it yet. Or I've forgotten it. Now I just... So, then there's heaven. And they know that there's God. And then there's Vaikuntha. And he's God. And then there's above Vaikuntha. And the intimacy of Vrindavan is, it's without knowing the science of bhakti rasa, it's fantasy. But for the resident of Vrindavan, it's the highest form of love, where it doesn't matter. It's not even a consideration. They have their worshipable deity in Narayan. And this is our friend, or our son, or our beloved, or whatever. And one sees and accepts everything in that relation. It's very elevated, very attractive, but it can't be understood except through the medium of devotion. It's just impenetrable for anyone other than for a devotee. And the Bhagavatam is revealing all of this to us. The relationship, this is Satya Yuga, there's the relationship between Kardama Muni and Vishnu. Now he knows who Vishnu is. He's the Lord of Vaikuntha. Or Sweta Dweep, the spiritual planet within this material world, Lord Vishnu. And that's his relationship. Now that Lord Vishnu has become his son, it's two different realities, meaning this is my son, and he's God. So same question as Kunti. How can God become born? He was unborn, become born. And Kunti speaks, this is just rasa. Kunti speaks, it's very easy for her to understand Krishna's super soul. She has difficulty seeing super soul touch her feet and offer respect as mother. And it's even totally off chart that super soul is fearful of a little stick in Mother Yasoda's hands and runs away. He who is feared by fear personified is afraid of a little stick. And it's a little stick. It's not like something, a weapon. A little lucky, little, like shaking her finger, and he's crying. So she throws the stick away because she doesn't want to see him cry. To Kunti, that's off the chart. She can't understand it at all. Her mind, so go backwards, her mind is disturbed seeing the Supreme Lord, Super Soul, manifest as her nephew. So that's she can handle that. But when he offers that, when he acts in the role of nephew, that's a problem for her. It's rasa. Then Kapila, he saw Lord Vishnu, said, I'll become your son. Brahma says, your son is Lord Vishnu. There's his son. He's coming before him and offering words of prayers, praise to his son. And we'll get to it later, but you know, then he leaves, going back to the forest. May take your leave. Meditate on Vishnu. Knowing that his son is Vishnu. So there's this sense of perfected souls to show others by example. And it's like a tendency. So two sharings from our little excursion to Ayodhya. One is about Vishvamitra and the other is about Kaikeyi. Little Ramkatha in the midst of all this. Vishvamitra Muni started off as a king. And he ended up being a perfected soul. There's this, you know, so many things that happened in between. There's a whole section where the chief priest of Janaka, Sanandana, who is the son of Gotama and Ahalya, glorifies Vishvamitra Muni. Whole section. And the fast forward is, he started glorious, but mundane, king. And, you know, without all the details of what happened in between, it got to the point where he understood he had a mission. He was meditating in the Himalayas, he came out of the Himalayas, went to the Siddha Ashram, was performing sacrifices for the benefit of the whole world. But Mareech and Sabahu were interrupting that, so he went to Dasarath's palace. He's normally in the Himalayas for thousands of years. Now he's over in Siddha Ashram doing yagyas. Now he's coming to... He doesn't have anything to do with city life. Forget it. But he came. And he came because there was some service for Ram. And as Vishishta says, just to give glorification to your son. And there's another purpose. Very important purpose, Leela-wise, is to give Ram weapons so he can defeat Ravana. He doesn't need weapons. But it's a service. There's this really beautiful section. After Vasishtha says to Dasharatha, don't say no. Say yes. And when you say yes, don't worry. Vasishtha can knock these guys out of the box. No problem. He's so powerful. He can create a whole constellation of stars. He's as powerful as Brahma. He doesn't need any help. It's for your son. He doesn't need you and your army. It's for your son. Don't worry. Everything's good. Okay. Ram went. The whole day passed. Leela. The whole day passed. They said nothing. They're following behind Vishwamitra Muni and walking, in the language of Valmiki Ramayana, like a three-headed cobra. There's their head. Over here is their bow. Over here is their arrows. Off to get, you know, do the bidding of Vishwamitra Muni. He's now a devotee from, you know, being a puffed up king. Then, you know, Brajarshi, and then Brahmarishi, and then a devotee. Whew. And here he is, serving the Supreme Lord. And so he's saying nothing because he wants to see, it's the Leela is, he's seeing what these boys are made of. How long can they walk without complaining? I'm tired. They said nothing. They just followed him. And he understood, these are good boys. Leela. There's this back and forth between he's the Supreme and he's a little boy. And the little boy, he was 12 years old when this thing took place. So they took rest at a suitable place by the side of a river. Then this very beautiful scene. Vishwamitra Muni's up early before the sunrise and he does his morning duties, and he then says this prayer or this verse, song, that the Sri Vaishnavas use for waking up deities in temples. And he's honoring Kaushalya, the mood of parental affection, as he's feeling parental affection. Rasa enters towards the Supreme Lord. And how fortunate is Mother Kaushalya that every morning she would do what I'm doing right now and just say pleasant words to wake her son, Ram. He's become, by serving the Supreme Lord and seeing the Supreme Lord, he's become pure in his devotion. And then after reaches the bow, let's go see the bow. And so, because he has another service, the marriage of Sita and Ram. He knows it. The marriage is arranged and he leaves. Very similar to what Karnam was going to do. He's when he left Siddha Ashram, he said, he was, bye-bye, I'm not coming back. He knew it. After the marriage of Sita and Ram, he went back to the Himalayas. Why? To meditate on Ram. But he's right there. Just hang out with Ram. And serve him in whatever way. So, but he has another service to do. So he went to do this other service. As Kardama Muni is going to be doing shortly. It's fascinating. To a worldly person, it's crazy. And to a person that's appreciating rasa, it's wonderful. There are different moods of love. And it has to be. Because within the Supreme Lord is everything, so there has to be different moods of love. And some exhibit this mood, and some exhibit that mood. And the mood of love in Vrindavan is most exalted, and here's a different mood of love. It's mood of love. He's recognizing the Supreme Lord has appeared for these reasons mentioned. It's in these three verses. And on the one hand, I'm the father. On the other hand, I'm the devotee. It's a very different kind, very unique kind of parental affection. Not the same as, but similar to, in certain ways similar to, the affection of Vishwamitra Muni. Then one last, just this. Rasa is a nice topic. It's a very elevated topic, but it's... There's lessons to be learned in so many levels, and one of them is rasa messages. So, not in the Valmiki Ramayana, I learned this recently, that after Bharat goes to try to bring Ram back, and you know, the answer is no, so he tried this and that, and everybody tried. So then the sandals are given and Bharata is leaving. So in the Adhyatma Ramayana, which isn't Valmiki Ramayana, it's from the Vishu Purana, but Prabhupada refers to it. So we'll just accept that it's an authentic and authorized depiction of Ram's Leela. Kaikeyi, the assembly of personalities have receded. She's lingering behind. Now, she has a relationship with Ram. She's a devotee. But she, her devotion for Ram got messed up by bad association. Mantra. Now, there's a whole description in Adhyatma Ramayana that mantra was sent by the demigods, an apsara, to go make sure Ram doesn't stay in Ayodhya because he's got to go kill Ravana. So she did what she did for that purpose, according to Adhyatma Ramayana. So she comes, now Kaikeyi, who is actually a devotee, but got, you know, fell in a ditch. Abominable, horrible, sinful, wicked. Language is vulgar, and you know, destined for hell for what she's done. She comes to Ram. And, you know, I got influenced by mantra. And although I revere you more than my own son, I did these horrible deeds that have just been disastrous. The result is disastrous. Now I understand, you're the personality Godhead. No, Valmiki Ramayana doesn't speak quite like that, but this other one does. You're the personality Godhead. And please forgive me. Obviously, her heart is wrenching with grief, for grief that she's caused her husband to die and the whole of Ayodhya to be upside down, and Sita and Ram and Lakshman in the forest, and you're the personality God because of me, you're in the forest wearing tree bark in exile like a criminal, because that's in Vedic culture there. So, and Ram's response as the voice of the personality Godhead, as they say in Australia, no worries. It was actually I who inspired you to do what you did. I, the personality Godhead, through my various potencies and agencies, have inspired you to do what you did. You did what I inspired you to do. So don't lament. Everything's going to be alright. That, you know, in other words, there's this higher purpose to everything, which we don't, what do we know in our lives, the higher purpose of everything? But if we stay steadfast in good association and avoid the mantra type of association, people that are envious and envious of the Supreme Lord or envious of devotee and vilify the Supreme Lord or vilify devotee and, you know, get association with those people, you get turned upside down too. So, and that's not the plan of the Supreme Lord. That's Ram's Leela, but it's not us. So, then he says, I simply reciprocate with the desires of my devotees. Bhakta Vatsala. So the demigods, similar to what's being said here, that's the connection. The demigods had concern. Ravana! So they approached me and I said, okay, I'll appear. So here I am to kill Ravana. And you're part of the So he just reciprocated with his devotees. So be a devotee and be favorable in your regard towards the Supreme Lord. Just simply try to please the Supreme Lord. That's what he's saying about himself and his wife, Devahuti. Although we're not at all qualified, just look, you've appeared. That's your nature. You're merciful. We're not great gyanis, we're not great yogis, we're devotees. And you've come. Now, I don't know too many families where the Supreme Lord has appeared as their son. I know some families that think their Supreme Lord has appeared as their son, but where the Supreme Lord appears as their son, that's very special. But without the worldly or material qualification of material yoga practiced over many, many lifetimes in a secluded place with full shelter and the personality God has. Then over here is the householder. So we're not going to do that one. We're going to do this one. And he'll be merciful. And we have that simple faith because it's his nature. He can do what he likes, but he's merciful. Whatever he does, it's merciful. We may not understand, but it's merciful. And remaining steadfast, then in that faith and that conviction, then we can endure anything. Anything. So we'll continue tomorrow morning. Cardinal's words with his son. Continue. Any discussion? Questions? Yeah?
So one is like, the distinction between, like, you know, Madhava Yashoda and Krishna and Padar Muni and Devahuti, you know. So here, like, she don't know that he's personality of God, but here, do they know that he's
God? Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
So it's not hidden?
No. They know.
Okay.
It's different. It's rasa-wise, it's different. There are different versions of the Ramayana and different versions speak differently. Specifically, Dasarath is told explicitly in different places without naming the places. He's the personality God. He can't see like that. He has some knowledge, different than what Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, he has some knowledge, but he can't see like that. when there's the encounter with Parashuram. Parashuram says it. Then he goes back, and now this boon of Kaikeyi, you know, sent him to the forest. He doesn't go, hey, Kaikeyi, he's the personality of Godhead. Take a hike. Who do you think you are, you upstart? It's something else. So the mood is different. The Yogamaya potency is acting differently for different purposes of glorifying and educating and training and moving the hearts of the audience, the hearer of the Supreme Lord's wonderful pastimes. For us too, in other words, not just those persons. Okay. You have something?
Sure. Actually, like you said, like there are different versions of Ramayana.
Yes.
Does this like become a reason, you know, in the day-to-day life when we wanted to, because now we see there is an attack on the Vedic culture on different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
People are just, even people who actually like try to follow them, they just sometimes discard, oh, it's just a different version. You know, there is a Kamba Ramayana is there, Valmiki Ramayana is there.
Yeah.
So when we do not feel the authenticity, like, you know, it just becomes difficult even for a person who is inclined to follow. So what could be the best reason, you know, like, then it just becomes, you know, like a...
Be very clear what your question is, not the problem. What's your question?
The question is like how to really educate ourselves, the authenticity of Ramayana, so that we can just follow the one version.
Well, you had me going and then you turned me upside down. I'm not a scholar in Ramayana. However, there are versions of Ramayana that Prabhupada cautioned, you know, so the gold standard is Valmiki Ramayana. And some persons, they're purists. Valmiki Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana, Valmiki, and it's not in Valmiki Ramayana, we don't even talk about it, we don't entertain it. That's one position. Our founder Acharya, there's one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he refers to Adhyatma Ramayana, the certain chapters, and explains things from those chapters. And Sanatana Goswami also makes reference to Adhyatma Ramayana. So it's not, we can put that one over here, along with the gold standard, but you know, we can go over here and accept that one. Our the lens that we look at is our founder Acharya, or look through. So over here he said some things about Tulsi Ramayana, over there he said some nice things about Tulsi Ramayana. So we don't discard it, but we can be put, you know, the gold standard is the gold standard, and we're particularly cautious about passages that may say, at least what Prabhupada said, I don't know where they are, that allude to Ram in an impersonal way. And therefore, you know, discouraged our involvement. But he says some appreciative things of Ramcharitamanas. And then there's representations from Padma Purana about Ram's Leela. I learned this. I didn't know this before this yatra. But that the story of the squirrel, it's not found in any of them except Padma Purana. And we accept Padma Purana. And then the Alvars. Prabhupada often quoted and sang the songs of Kulashekhar Alvar. You know, they're the preceptors of Sri Sampradaya. And they said some things that aren't elsewhere. So, now, Kamba, don't know so much about him. You know, so therefore it's like, there's this hierarchy. And all of those things are in the category of... And now let's go to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, where the whole topic of Ram's Leela begins. Shukadeva Goswami says, there's so many versions. I'd only take the authorized ones. He didn't say there's only one. Because in your language of your question, that's not what Shukadeva Goswami says, there's only one. Now for us, Srimad Bhagavatam is Amala Purana. So supposing there's something in Srimad Bhagavatam that's not in Valmiki Ramayana or vice versa, what do? We accept Valmiki Ramayana and Srimad Bhagavatam, and here's what, almost at the end. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has this phrase, forget the Sanskrit, something to do with different kalpas. They're differences due to different kalpas. Now kalpas can mean different things. Day of Brahma can mean different cycles of the four yugas. So in different cycles of the four yugas, there's differences. Central theme, but some variations on the theme. And Prabhupada's explanation is, variety is the mother of enjoyment. The Lord knows how to enjoy. So he does this. The rasa is the same, but the detail is slightly different. Your question is, for me,
if I have to explain to somebody, it shouldn't be considered as, oh, it's just a story. You know, it's just a kavya or something like that.
Okay. Well, so, if your question is not for your own heart, but you know somebody that's trashing the whole thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, there's Tepa Sandarbha, and we accept a Purusheya Shabda. And then that's our standard. The Vedas are from Narayana or from Krishna, and he's a Purusheya source, and the Shabda that come from him, that we accept. We accept Valmiki Ramayana in a similar manner. Why? Because he's not God. But we accept because our line of disciplic succession accepts Valmiki in that position. And the Padma Purana is part of that same Purusheya Shabda. So we accept that too. Now, my dear friend, you want to trash everything. Then that means you're trashing a Purusheya source. Let's not make that mistake. Then you can ask that person, what is the authority that you do accept? Your mind, your reasoning power, or your senses. If you say, well, no, they're fallible, then what do you accept? Sounds like you accept your mind.
Hmm.
Let's spend a little time about the fallibility of accepting things from the mind. So if your mind is fallible, where are you going to go? What do you accept? You can just become an existentialist. Nothing matters. You can't verify anything. Nobody knows anything. There's no standard of knowing anything. No pramana. Ours is this one. And I feel very firm about it. I'm using my reason capacity to be firm about it. Go through, have them read Tattva Sundarbha. Why do we accept? In the Bhagavatam, that's the best. And in the Bhagavatam, there's different versions that are authentic. So now, how are we going to discriminate? But, you know, I'm not going to trash everything. Because Bhagavatam says there's different versions. And I'll accept those. and you want to, you may want to trash the whole thing, then that's your choice. But where does that leave you? You're taking your mind as the authority, my dear sir. Very risky business. You're guaranteed, you're headed for the ditch, or if you're not already there. It's not, you're not going to get knowledge that way, or have truth. There has to be some pramana. This is, you know, our Vedic terminology, but there has to be the means of knowing something. You say, you know, I trash it all. You're an ignorant person. You're guaranteed. So anyway, let's not do that. Let's see. Let's go through the exercise. Let's go through this tapas and dharma sequence. How do you know anything? I know people like that. I know people that, without the detail, they're born in very wonderful tradition. They went to college and they got turned upside down and became existentialists. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't know anything. Mm. Very frustrating. Mm. Miserable. My dear sir, I don't want to be a companion of your misery. Take this Tattvasandarbha, go through, and see if you concur that Aparushaya Shabda is the best. Anything. Especially transcendence, but anything. Anything. Okay. Yes.
This aspect of working too hard on oneself.
Being too hard on yourself.
Or working to, like, being a transcendentalist, but not like the yogis and the impersonalists, they seem to be working very hard to achieve the
goal.
As compared to devotees, seems to be very simple, the process. But
doesn't mean we don't work hard at the simple process.
Right.
We just don't need to, you know, be a gymnast.
The question that I was having was that even as practicing devotees, many a time I see that when I work on cultivating the aspects of devotion, there has to be a refinement of alignment. That,
yes, yes.
That it doesn't go on the hardness side or...
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
So this is... I just want some like pointers like that can help in bringing the attention back on the right side than just working too hard on it. Even purification or alignment.
Fantastic question. This is a place where I don't like the word balance, usually because it's used in a way that it's inappropriate. But this is a place where it's appropriate. I can't help it. Because of the context of what I've just like locked myself into for 20 days, this whole discussion of Ram's Leela, it's right there. So, in the front of my mind. So there's this, the head and the heart. And the head part is the rules. And the heart part is the devotion. So we can't neglect the rules and just go from the heart. And we can't just go from the heart and neglect the rules. Which is, you know, there has to be a balance. And the personalities in Ramayana keep moving back and forth between these two. You know, their feelings and then their duty. So many times, so many persons in extreme cases, there has to be balance. Recognizing there has to be balance is important. then we go too far this way or go too far that way. In cultivating bhakti, it's not just the feeling. It's the mood of service. And that's my short answer is that's where you go for protection. It's the mood of service. Mood of service, there's certain things that are just not okay. So I don't do them. And there are certain things that are to be done, and so I do them. But in the mood of service. Not just duty. That's the, so you're exercising the bhakti principle while so the softness is there while following prescriptions can help me get to the goal. The rules and the sense of duty and doing what ought to be done, mode of goodness. But that's not the essence. The essence is the body. So you stay with the essence, the mood of service while doing. And get inattentive, and you can go too much this way or too much that way. Can't be lazy. You have to be attentive. Like, you know, it starts with japa, associating with the holy name. Inattentiveness is the root of the whole mess. So you have to be attentive. You're looking for, the question was, what are some guidelines? And I'm just giving one primary one. And there's refinements of that one primary one. Don't be excessive. Be devotional. That, you know, it's okay, I'll be devotional. They'll be very enthusiastic. Enthusiastic to the exclusion of social sensitivity. No. Look out, here I come, I'm going to Krishna. Get out of the way. Or I'm just like oblivious to anybody else that's going to Krishna too. That's not pleasing to Krishna. It's not the mood of service. Then I can go too far over there. So it's, as you said, it's this constant sequence or series of refinements of realigning ourselves to what's the goal? If we don't do that, we're lazy. No, we're not going to reach the goal. People may say, oh, you're a nice devotee. I think, yeah, they're nice. They're a nice person. They recognize I'm a nice devotee. But really, inside, I'm being inattentive like anything. And I'm interested in getting some praise and recognition or something. It's flawed. Even within the bhakti process. So, the question you're asking, what are some guidelines in making these series of refinements again and again? Be very clear what the life mission is. Pleasing Krishna. Anukulyena. Krishna Anushimana. The primary is primary and the secondary is secondary. The shilana, the behaviors, are secondary. The primary is pleasing Krishna. And then there's standards of what's pleasing to Krishna. Chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, this is very pleasing to me. So, those are qualities that he says are pleasing. And the qualities come from Krishna. So how we get the qualities? From Krishna. By pleasing Krishna, those qualities come. Because we're staying fixed on the goal of pleasing Krishna. Did you hear the yatra discussion? There's a really nice section where Lakshmana is being compared to Bharata. They're both, Ram's the Lord, and they're his devotees. I mean, he's the elder brother, but he's the Lord, than the other devotees. Lakshman is an intense devotee. And he sets all kinds of rules about what he wants to do. Ultimately, he does what... And Bharat is another. He's just... The language is, he's an instrument. The instrument doesn't decide what he wants to do. He has dialogue with Ram about, you know, let me do it this way. But he's the instrument. He's actually, in one sense, the hero. From the devotee side, now the hero of the Lord, the Lord's devotee. But you know, it's Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, not Sitaram Bharata Hanuman. So he's in this exalted position, Lakshmana. But Bharat is in this very special position too. So anyway, and his alignment is what's pleasing. They're both thinking because they're devotees. That bottom line, they're not going to leave devotional service to Ram. But the moods are different, and that's fine. So each of us, we have our mood of service, but they align to what's pleasing to the personality of Godhead and his dear devotees. And that's how I make those series of refinements. Those guidelines for those series of refinements. And it's not even that there's a right and a wrong in those refinements. It's the mood that's important.
Yes.
What's the idea?
The